In this week's episode, radio's answer to Hiddle Swift, the mighty Deeglander here to tell us why we need to get rid of our transmitter mindset and why this is the golden age of radio.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, innovative solutions for creative radio people.
I'm Trevor Dan. Hello, Stu Clarkson has this week's news and David Lloyd's got some more radio moments. But first, James Cridland and Matt Deegan. We'll talk about their next radio conference in a minute. But let's start with some fascinating observations about the state of our industry. I asked the radio futurologist, Mr. Cridland, who now lives in Brisbane, if he thinks we're getting to grips now with the challenges of multi-platform. Or are we still thinking of ourselves as radio stations instead of content creators with a multiplicity of delivery systems at our disposal, only one of which is our transmitter?
I think there are a couple of different things there. I mean, I went for a drive last week and listened to lots of radio stations here in Queensland in Australia that were very good at playing me 10 great songs in a row, very good at telling me the name of the radio station, its frequency, its positioning statement. And that was really about it. And I felt nothing about, you know, Queensland, about the Ipswich area, which I was driving through. You know, I learned absolutely nothing about that. And it concerns me a little bit that we're not necessarily being as real and relevant in terms of our content. But I think also on the other side, and particularly relevant for community radio, which is incredibly vibrant here as well, by the way, I think we're a little bit too concerned about live. And we're a little bit too wedded to the idea of a program grid and not necessarily concentrating on producing some great short-form content to make sure that that is aired as many times as people actually hear it and to make a great-sounding, consistent-sounding radio station. I think sometimes we just worry too much about feeding our transmitter, keeping that thing warm, and not necessarily worrying enough about producing some great content that can actually live on more than once.
Matt, you run Fun Kids and your company is also heavily invested in DAB and you own quite a few multiplexes. How does this look from your perspective?
I think the big shift, you know, mainstream radio, there is absolutely a place for kind of banging out the hits and trying to find the most accessible middle of the road music that gets you a wide audience. I think there's still a role for that. But that's hard. That's really hard to win at and achieve, especially when you've got big boys like Heart or Magic, you know, doing a good job at those things. I think where you can build value and get audience and do something different is by adjusting what you do and thinking about it in different ways. You know, Fun Kids is a radio station for children under 10 and their families. It's quite a different format to most of the stuff that's out there. And the success we have from it is because it's different, you know, because it talks to an unserved audience. And then it's our job to work out how best to make that content. And then also, and we probably spend about as much time promoting it and thinking about promoting it as we do about making it. Because in London, you have 85 radio stations on the DAB dial. You know, cutting through that is hard and you need to put a lot of effort in. But I mean, I think we are in the total golden age of radio now. The vast, you know, huge amount of radio stations in loads of markets. So the launch of the second national multiplex means somewhere like Hereford now gets 50 odd radio stations, where, you know, 15 years ago, it had sort of three or four. Pretty much all the stations on digital radio across the country, and definitely here in London, are presenter-led services with programming. You know, the number of jukeboxes there are, it's actually really small. It's kind of a handful. It's totally flipped the other way. And so I think we're in a kind of really great place. And what we're seeing on our local multiplex networks is that digital radio take-up has reached such a level where there are lots of new entrants. So in North Yorkshire, we've got three new local stations on air who are trying to do something to cater for York and for the areas around it that would never be able to get on FM. And digital is giving them a chance to do that and helping those people build a business to do that too. So I think we're totally in the golden age of radio now.
Matt Deegan and James Cridland will be back at the Royal Institution in London on September the 19th for their annual conference of ideas, Next Radio. I asked James to pick out a couple of highlights.
There are a couple of American speakers who we have, one called Tom Webster, who's from a research company called Edison Research that does some fascinating data into how we're listening to audio on mobile phones, you know, through the internet and all that kind of stuff. He's really, really good. I'm really looking forward to hearing that. There'll be some brand new information there. And also, the Americans do promotions really well, do station giveaways and competitions and stuff. They're really, really good at it. We have probably the best person in the world to come and talk about that. He calls himself Minister of Good Times, which is almost as ridiculous as calling yourself a radio futurologist. He's a man called Paige, I know, Paige Nienaber, and really looking forward to, again, I've seen him speaking actually in Denmark, of all places. Really looking forward to hearing what he has to say.
I think those two names immediately, for anybody who's not been, suggest what is different about Next Radio from the radio festival. Matt, when you meet people who don't know about Next Radio, how do you explain to them what its purpose and zeitgeist are?
What I mainly tell people, and they get very excited about, is that there are no panels, because panels are incredibly boring. I've rarely been to a good panel. Even the ones that I've been on have been quite poor, and where generally four people, usually white men, don't argue very much about themselves and all end up agreeing on something over 40 minutes. Whereas with Next Radio, every session is 9 or 18 minutes. It's sort of TED Talk-like, if you've seen that before, where people give an insight into something they're an expert about, and it really speeds along. I remember Brett Spencer from Radio 2 and 6 Music once described it as relentless, which I thought was a great description.
You talk about it on your website, Matt, as being a place where bosses don't go, and in a way that's part of the sense of the debate being less constrained. I think nobody's standing up there trying to make a pitch for their next job or establish their credentials for the one they've got.
I think the great Next Radio speakers are people who are just sharing something that they're proud of. And often other conferences, when bosses speak, sometimes they haven't written that speech, or it's kind of the current station line or company line. I think they can deliver it quite well, but it's not very personal. Whereas, you know, the people who come and speak in Next Radio, the ones who actually do it, you know, who worked out that idea or had a go with it and are describing what happened. And I think that's always really powerful.
James, you go to more conferences than most of us, and you attend them literally all over the world. What makes a good radio conference? Because Matt's right that sometimes, even though they've got some very distinguished speakers, they can be a bit on the dull side.
Yeah, I mean, I've written a very entertaining article somewhere on this exact thing.
But I'll bet you have.
Somewhere, but I can't remember where it is. Otherwise, I'd be rushing to find it now. I mean, I think there are a number of different things. Not having panels is important. Actually doing the day as a proper show, as something that the organisers actually spend time on the polish of it. The radio festival is very good at that. Next Radio is very good at that. I think that's, you know, also important. And I've been to enough radio conferences around the world where the audio hasn't worked, where you've been, you know, running around waiting between sessions. It's all not been organized particularly well. Touch wood, ours should be okay from that point of view. But I think also,
I particularly like the fact that you two are the presenters of the day, and you have obvious buy-in, and it feels like a curated event, not so much something slung together by a committee and then presented by somebody who didn't know who was on until they arrived that morning.
Well, we basically invite people that we would like to see speak. So that's one of the sells, is, you know, it's people we're excited to hear about. So we hope that the audience are excited to hear about it too.
Now, I'm sure you heard Roger from the Radio Academy last week on this podcast talking about why the two events have come so close. How do you guys feel about that? They're just a week apart now, the festival and Next Radio.
Yeah, it's all a bit strange, really. When we started Next Radio 6 years ago, the Radio Academy ran the Radio Festival as a 3-day festival in Manchester that was quite expensive towards the end of October. So we decided to do something in London that was just one day and was cheap. And so we knew that the Sonys were at a certain time and that the radio center have a conference at a certain time. So we put Next Radio in the sort of middle of September in London to try and make it different. Obviously, the Radio Festival is now a one-day conference in London that's slightly less expensive and a week after us. So it's sort of, it's a bit weird. I mean, we did try and speak to them earlier in the year about, we told them our dates and what we were thinking about, but I don't think they're particularly bothered to think about what we're doing. I think they see their thing as quite different. And so, yeah, that's what they've done.
What kind of buy-in do you get from the big groups and from the BBC? You know, the festival is proud of saying that it has major speakers from the BBC and the commercial stations. And even though Global don't pay for the Radio Academy anymore, they seem to be happy to supply people to talk. What sense do you get that the management and executives of the UK radio industry are bought into what you do?
I think it's very rare that anyone says no to speaking. And I think it's hopefully because it's an event that they see value in. You know, everyone's got a little bit of a show off in them. People quite like, you know, talking about what they're doing. I know that me and James are a bit like that. So that's part of the reason I think that we do it. But I think one of the interesting bits is, and this is for the whole industry and for the radio festival too, how you get organisations to encourage and pay for people in their teams to go. And we've sort of got a strange situation where, you know, probably more people are coming from NRK in Norway to Next Radio than some of the big radio groups. And that would, it just seems weird and a bit strange. And I know that the Radio Festival and Next Radio have tried lots of different ways to encourage the UK groups to get involved a bit more. But we're not sure what the answer is, are we, James?
No, I mean, I think on the other side, the BBC have actually been really supportive. The BBC Academy actually helps with tickets. And if you're working for a BBC local radio station, then do watch out for the email, which is asking if you would like to go to Next Radio, because you could go for free. They've already bought the tickets. So, you know, and I think that's a really interesting side of it as well. One of the things that the BBC is very good at doing at the Radio Festival, which I've always seen as is really driven by them. What they're very good at doing is celebrating radio and celebrating the medium, and sort of almost patting ourselves on the back and saying, aren't we brilliant? I think what Next Radio tries to be is the Radio Ideas Conference. It's ideas about where to take radio next. It's ideas from all over both the UK sector, but also from other places as well. And I think that's really one of the differences there. We haven't actually announced yet a speaker from the BBC, so we might as well do that now, I guess. We've got Steve Martin and Nisha Lahiri from the BBC. They're actually talking about using audience research to develop successful new content. They'll be talking about a new style of news bulletin, which is something actually fairly important. So, you know, we'll have speakers from the BBC as well, and, you know, really looking forward to, you know, hearing ideas from them and also from the people who make great shows for them.
So it's on September the 19th. It's at the Royal Institution, right in the middle of London near the Ritz. Tickets still available, guys, and how do we get them?
Yeah, absolutely. Tickets are £149 now. If you want to get them, just search for Next Radio Conference. And if you're kind of interested but aren't sure whether you want to come along, if you go to the website, we've got nearly 100 videos of sessions from previous conferences, so you can see the kinds of things that are there. And we try and build something that covers all disciplines, so whether that's news or promotions, advertising, interactive. And I think one of the things that people say to us they enjoy is that even if they're, say, a news journalist, you know, they get exposed to different ideas which they can then apply to what they do. And we try and pick speakers to really help with that. And one of the speakers we've got this year is a guy called Craig Bruce, who ran the biggest Australian radio group up to the end of last year. Huge, kind of interesting talent guy, getting the best out of talent, that I think will really get the sort of juices flowing if you see what he has to say. And if you need your boss to need some encouragement for your boss, we're more than happy to help that out, help you out to do that as well.
And it's probably also worthwhile saying, because we're in the wonderful position of sharing a sponsor, to thank Broadcast Bionics for their help as well, because, you know, genuinely without their help we wouldn't be able to put this wonderful day on.
So all that, and Ian Lee and Catherine Boyle too, what more could we want? Are there any discounts available just before I let you go?
I think we've got some discounts for RIG members, which you can kind of get through the RIG Radio Independence Group newsletter.
Excellent. Matt Deegan, James Cruden, thank you so much. I look forward to seeing you both at Next Radio in September, September the 19th. Thanks for coming on the Radio Today programme, and let's have some news now with Stu Clarkson.
Broadcast Bionics, innovative solutions for creative radio people.
Thanks, Trevor. This week it's farewell to Leicestershire station Oak 107, which closed down abruptly. It was the station made up of the old Fosway licence and the original Oak station in Loughborough. Key 103's been found in breach of the Ofcom broadcast code on two counts over its recent Heartless Hotline competition. One complainant described the treatment of a competition entrant on the 27th of April as disgusting, while Ofcom also had two complaints about the game 2 days later, when listeners said the competition hadn't been conducted fairly. There are wholesale changes at Rock FM in Preston. Married couples Steve and Janine Marsh take over on Breakfast. Fiona Sadler joins for Daytimes. And Northwest stalwart Ditchie takes over at Drive. He replaces Jordan North, who's been doing a load of cover shifts on Radio 1 recently. Robin Banks is leaving Jack FM Berkshire. The former KISS, Virgin and Atlantic 252 jock is off to Oman to be the content director of High FM. And James Whale is flying the flag for radio in the Celebrity Big Brother house on Channel 5 at the minute. The former Metro, Air, Talksport and LBC presenter has taken the rest of the summer off from his BBC Essex breakfast show to take part in the reality series. And those are this week's big stories from radiotoday.co.uk. I'm Stuart Clarkson.
Thank you, Stu. David Lloyd after this.
Broadcast Bionics brings you Phone Box, Oasis, Virtual Director and many more innovative solutions for creative radio people. Come to bionics.co.uk and find out more.
It's 2 years this week since we lost Mike Smith.
Mike Smith!
Smithy!
A few things to introduce you to this morning on the new breakfast show. We shall break you in nice and gently. The sort of things we've got coming for you is a new competition, and there'll be a chance for you to ring me this morning, and a chance to join...
Radio 1 hardly had a phone-in thing.
I don't remember Radio 1 having a phone number when I started listening.
We started having a phone number on the breakfast show, because that was one of the reasons I said I would do it, is if we could have this phone-in thing going. There was so much that you wanted to do then that you couldn't do because of the rules.
Hello? Line 2, Keck. Are you there? He's not. In Bedfordshire, line 3... No, let's go to Ray on line 4. Hi, Ray. Ray, you're there. You're very, very faint. Speak up. Yeah, I think you've probably got a radio on. Where are you calling from?
Mike Smith, the fifth presenter of Radio 1 Breakfast, who died this week in 2014. 9 years ago, the Gold Network began the final fusing of two AM oldie services under the GCAP ownership.
Hi, I'm Greg Edwards, and welcome to Gold, the UK's newest classic hits radio network, created by the merger of Capital Gold and Classic Gold Networks. We hope to offer you something new and exciting, as well as playing the widest breadth of the greatest songs from the last five decades. Gold will entertain you with a variety of specialist music shows, exclusive interviews, special guest DJs, and VIP gigs. So let's get the soul party started with Chera Lynn. Gold. Where it's all about the music.
The start of the Gold Network, which began at 7 o'clock on the evening of Monday, the 3rd of August 2007. The Pepsi chart was the second incarnation of the network chart across commercial radio, and this week Foxy took the reins under that new sponsor.
It's the official UK Hot 10 on the number one rated Pepsi chart.
In the top 10 this week, we got one new entry to come. Two songs are climbing up. Six songs are going down. One song doesn't budge. Robbie, or do we have a new number one?
He was hot, wasn't he? Dr. Fox taking over the Pepsi chart this week in 93. John Walters was John Peel's long-time producer, and he died this week 15 years ago. John Peel wrote in the Radio Times that the relationship between us is that of a man and his dog, each believing the other to be the dog.
In some ways, what's wrong with Radio 1 was the way in which it was marketed in the first place. In that I was just coming into radio at that time from the pop music business. And my impression, in the same way that I think most people got the impression, that it was going to be, in some way, a substitute for the Pirates. It was going to be a pop station with a capital P.
I have to say that I always expected that John Walters, despite his illness, would outlive me, because he was absolutely determined to be at my funeral in order to deliver the eulogy, which would have been enormously long, very, very funny, and I suspect would have reflected a great deal of credit on him and not nearly so much on me.
John Peel on John Walters, who died this week in 2001. 5 years ago, Radio X was XFM, and that London station had a new breakfast show.
Danny Wallace, wake up. Come on.
Danny. Danny, come on. Danny, it's me, Dermot.
Danny, wake up. Come on. It's the OC. It's Christian.
Danny Wallace, Richard Bacon here. You need to get up.
Danny. Danny, you fat lump. Wake up. This is no way to start a breakfast show career. Trust me, Tarrant, I know these things. Wake up, you fat git. Get out of bed. God, this is hopeless.
Daniel, the power now belongs to you, my son.
You need to get out of bed. This is your first show on XFM. You cannot let those listeners down.
This is your time to shine.
Get up. Shift it.
Come on, buddy, that indie rock's not going to play itself.
Brilliantly done, if you've spotted all those voices. The arrival of Danny Wallace on XFM Breakfast this week in 2011. This week in 1921 saw what's hailed as the first ever radio commentary in the world. It was play-by-play baseball on KDKA Pittsburgh.
This is KDKA of the Westinghouse Electric and Manufacturing Company in East Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Harold Arlin was the commentator back then, by the way, and he used an old phone, an old telephone, as a microphone. Hello, I'm Harold! It was a home win, by the way, which probably cheered him and his listeners at KDKA.
KDKA, KDKA, Pittsburgh!
14 years ago this week, Radio 1 breakfast show host Sarah Cox was reportedly reprimanded after she suggested the Queen Mother smelt of wee. Sadly, I don't have the audio, but if you do, please get in touch. 1989 now, and what's this launching across Ireland?
This is Atlantic 252. To improve your reception of our signal on the long wave band, you could simply try lifting your radio set and turning it around a little bit to either the left or the right. Regular broadcasts of Atlantic 252 will begin soon.
Sounds like an April Fool's, doesn't it? But it wasn't. It was the mighty Atlantic 252 launching this week in 89 on long wave. It went on to attract huge audiences here in the UK. The frequency later went to Team Talk 252, which lasted just 4 months. And that closed this week in 2002.
All right, 40 seconds remaining, but less than that. And not only less than that, in the World Cup. Who was that? Ireland against whom?
Oh, Spain.
Somebody.
Yeah. Less than 40 seconds remaining in the life of Team Talk 252.
It's very tragic, isn't it?
It is, but we're heartened by the fact that senior management have told us that they'll do everything they can, and they're off on holiday.
Farewell to the short-lived Team Talk 252, which broadcasts from Leeds, didn't it? 3 years ago this week, David Jacobs hosted his last programme on Radio 2.
Conducted by Eric Rogers, bringing this week's collection to a close. I'll be here at the same time next week, so until then, or whenever, on behalf of my producer, Alan Boyd, it's good night from me, David Jacobs.
David Jacobs, who died a month after that broadcast, he'd been on air for 7 decades. So, with offshore pirate radio 355 closing 49 years ago...
To all of you who have written to me, my thanks. To all who tried to help us, the thanks of all of us.
The death of Michael Bucht 5 years ago, the first capital PD and Classic FM founder.
And therefore you want more from a good radio station
than just good music.
And BBC Southern Counties launching 22 years ago. It had been BBC Sussex and Surrey. It was formed from a merged Radio Surrey and Radio Sussex, and Radio Sussex had been Radio Brighton.
In Eastbourne, Dorking, Midhurst, Guildford, Uckfield, Arundel and Redhill, this is BBC Southern Counties Radio.
Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Radio Moments!
Cheers, David. Credit this week to Stuart Clarkson, researcher Hayley Hayes, and Celebrity Listener of the Week, Jane Garvey. This has been a TDC production. I'm Trevor Dan. Ta-da!
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.